Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. Guess what? Donna is back. Yes, she is back. She has been gone for a long, long time, and I can't say her timing is the best because she came from the lovely warm south.
Yeah, I'm going, what time is it? That's not jet lag. What season is it, for goodness sake?
Well, you came back in February, and here we are. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
A little bit of snow never hurt anybody.
So, this is the Donald in the Kitchen. We meet once a week here in this fine community radio station to do a show about food, farming, advice, recipes, opinions, and Donna is back. We get a lot of help from our friends. Here's one of them.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
And we do. We do. Lots of things going on at that Wheatsfield Co-op place.
Certainly is.
But they do have a parking lot now. After a rocky sort of fall and early winter, there's a place to park now and lots of good things over there. So, again, welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen, and welcome back from New Zealand. I hope you had a dandy time, Donna.
Oh, I did. Can't you see my suntan?
Yes. You look not like the rest of us around here. Tell us where you were.
Well, I was in Tauranga, New Zealand, which is on the North Island on the Bay of Plenty, with my daughter and her family. She's taken my only grandchild halfway around the world, so I have... Believe me, I would not travel otherwise. Not that, I mean, New Zealand is gorgeous, I must say. But, you know, being a tourist sort of is, after a while, you want to get on with your life, you know. You see lovely things, but you don't put your roots down there. So I did visit a lot of farms and saw a lot of beautiful, beautiful places and swam in rivers and lakes and oceans, and swimming is my thing. So it was pretty fabulous.
Good. We'll be asking you about all your adventures. Oh. And you have, remember, this past couple weeks, she's been sending us audio postcards, and we have enjoyed a look into a little bit of food and farming. She sent us a little bit of a story about a cider orchard, a cider press place. And she brought me back a bottle of ice cider from New Zealand.
Yes, it's from the O Cider Company, and it's really yummy. I can't wait to see what you think of it.
Probably like it really dark.
Oh, well. I expect so.
And a couple of weeks ago, we had a visit to a butcher, which was a lovely, lovely show, too.
Yeah, so. I have a couple of more things that I've recorded, and, you know, we can talk a little. Of course, I did a lot of... I have a friend there, Catherine Chappell, who also used to be a private chef in Los Angeles, though she is a Kiwi, a New Zealander. So it's fun to go traveling with her because we do a lot of food-oriented things. And like we went to a buffalo mozzarella plant in New Zealand.
Oh, like water,
real
water buffalo.
Yes,
not the
and they made really the most delicious cheeses and yogurts and water buffalo milk. I haven't had water buffalo milk since I was in India 45 years ago. Hello.
Oh, my.
It was good. It was good.
And how did you enjoy this water buffalo milk? What does one put it on or cook it in?
Well, let's see. What did I do with it? I did make a panna cotta with it.
Ah.
It was very, very good. That was for a little dinner party. And I just drank it. Buffalo milk is, and now this is not our kind of buffalo. This is the water buffalo, right? So it's apparently much higher in protein and hugely higher in calcium and much higher in butterfat, too.
Oh, my.
But it's delicious. So putting it in your coffee is amazing. Buffalo milk yogurt. They had a whole range of products. It was very... They're quite interesting in their agriculture down under there.
Oh, can't wait to find out more about it. Oh, speaking of cheese, you recommended a place in Des Moines, Donna, and I actually got myself down there. I went to the
What's
a place
it called? The cheese shop. Right.
Cheese shop, and it's right on... On 42nd
mm-hmm.
Street.
Easy to get to.
In that same little Roosevelt shopping center.
Yeah, on one side of the street with Lamy Bakery.
Right.
And there's a whole little strip there.
And a nice repurposed clothing store that I highly recommend.
Oh.
But at the end of this little shopping center is a place called The Cheese Shop. And it is full of stuff. It is full of lovely cheeses. They'll give you samples, and they feature wonderful meats. I had a taste of acorn-fed ham, and it was
The La Quercia one?
It was La Quercia one.
Yeah.
They have that stuff, and they have we had stopped in for a little lunch. They had a
wonderful. You can either go in and buy your cheese and your sliced meats. Or they have a wonderful, they have a kitchen there, and they make really good food. I really like, it's one of my favorite places to eat in Des Moines. And the chef and the owner, whose names I'm not remembering, they're quite au courant, really. they really are looking for the best in Iowa. Very clever boys. It's a lovely, lovely place.
It really is. And I looked at the menu and noticed products, vegetables, eggs from people that I know.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Local food. I even knew the dishwasher as he came in. I knew him, too.
Exactly. And you know what? Now that I'm back, we've got to call up the Story City Locker and see if they have gotten the thing that it's a piece of equipment that makes it so we will be able to have pig's feet and things like that.
Oh, that's right.
We had talked about that.
We were talking about that, and I haven't. We shall find out.
Because the guys at the cheese shop also are onto this, and there's a few of us really looking forward to this. So we'll have some good stories about that. And so who knows? Maybe they'll be having boiled pig's feet at the cheese shop in Des Moines.
We could do that. They do that sort of thing.
They do. They make a lot of their own pâtés and charcuterie there, and they're quite the chef is quite good, really.
I have to recommend it, and I've only scratched the surface of the menu. They have lovely cheese plates and things that I must go back.
They
go
have
back,
macaronis and cheeses and sandwiches. It's when I go to Des Moines, that's where I really like to go.
So thanks for turning me on to that place. It's local, and they get a lot of stuff that's from other places, of course, but they really do a fine job of tickling our taste buds.
Oh, they have good beer, too.
Oh, they do.
Yes,
and
they
wine.
Yep,
Kazoo. Up the kazoo.
We have good food in Iowa, don't we?
Oh, are you glad to be back?
Oh,
I am. We are glad to have you back. That's good. Well, missed the Super Bowl, but then so did I. I sort of forgot it was on. Sorry, folks. Don't turn into the Donna Lana Kitchen for any kind of sports report, because I just totally blew that one off.
Just not our thing. Sorry, folks.
However, today is Mardi Gras. So happy,
oh, it is.
Yes, it is. Happy Fat Tuesday, speaking of.
Oh, it's Fat Tuesday.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Welcome back, Donna. Yes.
Oh, where am I? What time is it?
And we do not necessarily celebrate Mardi Gras as Mardi Gras here, but
What is Fat Tuesday?
It is the day before Lent. It is a day of feasting, revelry, and general
your
good
last
times.
Chance to be wild, naughty
last
for
chance, yes.
Till Easter.
Celebrate our humanity and our joy of living until before we slip into Ash Wednesday, which is tomorrow, we're supposed to be a little more circumspect, I believe.
Are we giving up anything for Lent?
I hadn't thought about that. Are we giving in? No, I don't think so.
Well, you know, with the interview that you're going to play about giving up sugar, I wonder if I could give up sugar till Easter.
That's very good.
Oh, that would be intense. I'm not making promises. I'll think about it.
That is a good segue there, Donna, right on top of it there. I talked to a very interesting young person here from AIM called Kira Travisette.
And Kira is 14, right?
She or 15, 14. 14. I talked to this. She's a very together young person with
she
a mind of her own.
Is.
Yes, she is. Too much processed white sugar with celebrations and Valentine's Day coming up, we tend to, like, eat a lot of it. And sometimes we don't know how much of a thing like that can affect us until we get rid of it. I talked to Kira Travisette, who's a student at the Ames High School here. She decided to study the effect of sugar. She was just having on her health. It was just part of a class project, but then she
right. This was motivated by something she was studying in
she
high
was
school.
Studying, and she decided, well, let's just give this a try. She
for a whole year she has been doing this.
Now, this wasn't part of her project for a whole year, but I talked to her about the changes she made in her life. She had a lot of things to say. She made a conscious decision to eliminate white sugar from her diet. And here is her story. We're here in the Donna Lana kitchen with Kira Travisette. We're going to be talking about sugar. Some sugar, no sugar. More sugar, less sugar. Welcome to the Donna Lana kitchen, Kira.
Thank you for having me.
Who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Kira Travisette. I'm 14 years old, and I go to the Ames High School.
You recently made a decision. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it actually started more than a year ago, where in my eighth grade health class, I had to set a goal for myself, and it had to go on for 4 weeks. And I decided that I was going to cut sugar out of my diet. And I mean added sugar. I don't mean like fruits and cheese sugar. I believe there's sugar in cheese. But just added sugar, such as in cookies or cakes. And I stuck to it, and I realized that it really helped me clear my head, and I was feeling so much better, so I kind of stuck with it.
You did. So you've been doing that for how long now?
I'd say a little over a year now.
Oh my goodness. So you can actually tell us what it feels like. What made this, you said that you did this as part of a class, but was there also a doctor's recommendation as part of this too? Just your choice.
Well, there was actually no doctor recommendation whatsoever, but I had just started cross country, and they told us that eating less added sugar would help us run. And since I had to set this goal anyways, I thought that I'd just kind of combine the two and see how it went.
Well, good. Sugar is a big part of the American food diet. So what do you not eat, and what do you choose to eat?
Well, I eat a lot of fruit and a lot of vegetables, just a lot of that stuff that you're supposed to eat, you know, whole grain, bread. I eat a lot of peanut butter, a lot of peanut butter. I do stay away from, you know, cookies, cakes, obviously. I also try to stay away from white bread, which also can have a lot of sugar in it. And just in general, I try to eat less processed foods. That always, obviously isn't always possible, but it definitely helps me.
You're trying. Also, soft drinks tend to be rather sugary.
No, I don't drink any soft drinks. I do like unsweetened iced tea, though. And I really like juice, too.
There you go. Did you find it that you were reading labels more? How did you can't just immediately assume that a product that says healthy, all natural, oh, good, this is for you, organic, is going to be good for you. So what did you learn by researching what you eat?
I did actually find myself reading a lot more labels, but what I did find much easier than just reading labels was to just stick with whole foods, because if you eat a banana, you can be assured that what is in there is 100% banana. So, yes, there is a lot more label reading involved, but after a while, you kind of figure out what products do have sugar and which ones don't, and it becomes kind of second nature to figure out which ones you're going to eat and which ones not.
Very good. Was it difficult? You are at the Ames High School, and there's things like peer pressure and advertising and school lunch. How do other people react to you? How do your friends react to this experiment?
Well, my friends just kind of remember that I won't eat, you know, cookies like they will. And, well, it's not that big of an issue with anyone, really. There's always kids that are doing things with their diets, such as becoming vegetarian or even vegan. So someone that isn't eating sugar isn't too big of a deal. It was hard at the beginning, I would say. It was the first week, maybe even the first 2 weeks were very hard because you're kind of trying to break away from this craving that you have for sugar. And it is difficult, but after that, you just kind of stop having cravings for sugar and you feel so much better.
Oh, good for you. Is your family supportive of this?
Oh, yeah, they're very supportive. And if they have sweet stuff in the house, they just remember not to offer it to me. But they always keep, they usually make the meals that they don't have any sugar in them. And, yeah, they've just been very supportive.
Good. So you say you feel much better and you're on the cross-country team?
I'm currently swimming right now.
Swimming. Okay, good. And you can tell the difference.
Oh, yeah. I swim so much better. And even when I was doing cross-country, I was running so much better when I don't eat sugar. And I feel like my energy level stays a lot more constant. And something that's very strange, but I didn't expect to happen, is that my head feels a lot less cloudy. It feels very clear and I can think clearly, which I didn't even realize I was not thinking clearly when I was eating sugar until I stopped eating it, which was kind of an interesting effect of my diet experiment, I guess.
Well, I bet that's handy. Your head being a little clearer. Good
yeah.
for you. Good for you. So what did you learn? Would you tell others to think about sugar consumption anyway?
Oh, yeah. I would definitely recommend that if maybe going off sugar completely is a little too drastic for them, even just cutting some of it out. So maybe switching out a granola bar for a snack, which can have so much added stuff in it, for some fruit or something like that, you will notice that you will feel a difference. And, yeah, this in the U.S., there is a very high amount of sugar consumption, and that is just not good for people's health. So I would definitely recommend it. And I have learned myself that, yeah, I do feel better when I don't eat sugar. So,
well, there you have it. There you have it. She did a wonderful experiment. She kept to it and found out that she felt much, much better. This is a good example of thinking for yourself. You kind of a history of thinking for yourself. There was a little story in the past in the news here. You were part of something in this town called the Fort Kids. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So me and my friends, we built a fort in one of my friends' well, not backyard, but he had a woods behind his house, and we decided to build a fort on it. And it was this massive fort. It was actually kind of a hut. And we went down there almost every day, and we'd spend, you know, 5 hours there just building and having fun. Or maybe one of my friends would even bring a guitar, and she'd just sing along, and it was very fun.
How many kids were doing this?
Well, it depended on the day, but I'd say there was about 5 or 6 people that came down almost every day, and they were, you know, the usual kids. And then there was always people that would come down for a couple days or maybe just come down for an hour or so and see the fort. We always had visitors. It was very fun.
Sounds like a wonderful thing to do in the summertime. However, this did not meet with a good end because you ran afoul of the authorities. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, one day when we were in the woods, which I forgot to mention, but this was in the Munn Woods, we had a person from the Ames Parks and Rec come down, and they told us that our fort was on public property and that we had to take it down because you cannot have structures on public property. And as you can expect, we were pretty devastated by that. And we actually took it to the council, the Ames Parks and Rec committee. We took it to them. And we talked about maybe setting up this fort-friendly zone, we called it, where kids would be allowed to build forts so that the city wouldn't take them down. We're still talking with them. They told us that they would, you know, contact us in the spring most likely. And, well, it is kind of winter right now, so we're still kind of in this waiting process. But in the end, actually, our fort was not taken down by the city. What ended up happening is that our fort was on a little, like, ledge, I guess, next to a creek, and the ledge got eroded so much that the fort almost fell in. So we spent an entire afternoon just taking it apart and bringing it up to the surface so that we didn't pollute the creek.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you learned a whole lot of things. Oh, I remember making forts. I saw a picture of your fort, however, and your fort wins hands down. It was a dandy, dandy structure. I hope you'll be able to do this in the future. And you're willing to talk about this sort of thing. There's a need for people to gather, to build, to have fun in the summertime. So best of luck in that.
Thank you.
Good, good. So that's a good example of thinking for yourself and thinking for yourself with friends. Thank you for coming and talking to us about what you found out about sugar, an important thing, something for all of us to think about. So what's your favorite non-sugar, non-processed sugar thing you like to grab and eat right away?
Okay. See, this might be a little bit of a difficult question because there's a lot of good food out there. But I have to say peanut butter. I just eat so much peanut butter. I just absolutely love it. But the fresh ground peanut butter.
There you go.
With good. Anything.
Well, it sounds like you're getting along just fine. Thank you for sharing your story, Kiara.
Thank you.
Good job. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 Story City Ames. This is community radio. This is good tasting radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. It is
on Fat Tuesday.
Oh, it is. It is Fat Tuesday. Well, yes, it is.
I'm thinking we got to eat something ridiculous tonight.
Oh, well, I just may pop open
something sugary.
Not too much. Just celebrate because we're going into Lent and thinking of that sort of season too. Oh, so happy Mardi Gras to you, everybody. We've heard a lot of politics this winter. Everybody's gone. It is so quiet. You can get a parking place any place in Iowa now. It's pretty good. All the politicians and the media are kind of out of our hair.
You know, I have to say, several times while I was in New Zealand, I have an American accent. Hello. People say, oh, several people said to me, you know, just perfect strangers in, like, you know, you go to the grocery store or something. They say, are you from Iowa? And the first time that happened, I thought, why are they saying that? Because the caucuses were so much. I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. But people never ask you if you're from Iowa. They go, oh, are you from California? Are you from Chicago? Are you from, am I from Iowa? Yes, I'm from Iowa. The caucuses made international news. And people also made some astounding comments. They can't believe what's going on in our presidential race this time. I won't get into politics because we don't do that on this show, but there are some characters running, and it was duly noted on the international scene.
So there you go. A foreign correspondent report there. Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
Yes, they do think the Americans have lost it this time.
I will make a short little political reference here, too. This is just, by the way, to lead us into a tune here. We heard a little bit about how things don't always have to be done the way they're done here in the United States. Their capitalism isn't the only model. There's other models. And we're talking about Scandinavian countries and how they set up their countries. And they have some good ideas. Maybe we should look into that.
Yes, I believe they're democratic socialists.
There's that word. I like social security. Yes, okay. That's what was discussed. And in honor of that and also in honor of it being so darn cold outside, I brought in a CD of tunes from Scandinavia. The CD is called John Berquist and the Southside Swedes. Now, this is actually from Chicago. The people are the musicians are from Chicago, but they all have Scandinavian heritage. And actually, John Berquist used to live in Ames, and if anybody remembers John Berquist, raise a glass to him. He was a fine musician, plays a dandy squeeze box, and he's a historian. He loves Scandinavian history, language, music, collects all of this stuff. So the first tune we're going to hear here
is a Swedish folk song. It's called, here it goes, Uti Varhaga, Swedish folk song. And John has also done a translation of what this person is singing about. He kind of translates it. It's called Out in the Meadow. And he talks about the flowers of the meadow, the columbine, the roses, the sweet salvia. Ah, but none is so fair as my heart's delight is what this song is all about. And it's a dandy tune. So let's listen to this Swedish folk song.
Ho, ba-deedle-dye, ba-deedle-dye-dee-dye. Ho, ba-deedle-dye-dum, deedle-dye-dee-dye. Ut i vår hage, det vekser blåbær, kom hjertens frøy. Vil du med något, så träffas vi där. Kom liljer och akvileje, kom rosa och salvia, kom ljuva kryssmynta, kom hjärtens fröj. Fagra små blommor, där bjude till dans, kom hjärtens fröj. Vill du så binder jag dig en krans. Kom liljer och akvileje, kom rosa och salvia, kom ljuva kryssmynta, kom hjärtens fröj. Kransen, den sätter jag sen i ditt hår, kom hjärtens fröj. Solen den dalar, men hoppet uppgår. Kom liljer och akvileje, kom rosa och salvia, kom ljuva kryssmynta, kom hjärtens fröj. Ut i vår hage finns blommor och bär, kom hjärtens fröj. Men utav alla du kärest mig är, kom liljer och akvileje, kom rosa och salvia, kom ljuva kryssmynta, kom hjärtens fröjd. Ba-diddle-dye-dee-dye, ho-ba-diddle-dye-dum, ba-diddle-dye-dee-dye.
We're back. A little music from the Scandinavian countries. That was a Swedish folk song by John Bergqvist. We'll hear a little bit more from him later. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and I'm here in the kitchen with Donna. Donna Prisgintis is back from her vacation, and she is back in cold Iowa. Welcome back, Donna.
Thank you. I have to say it's very good to be home.
Good. Often on the kitchen, we look outside of our kitchen window and take note of our environment, what's happening out there, because what happens out there eventually ends up on our plates. And there's been an issue in central Iowa, and actually a lot of other places too, about the pipeline, the Bakken pipeline. Matter of fact, I think there's some voting by the people that decide this sort of thing. It's kind of up for the final decision now.
Yes, it is in a government process.
Right. The Bakken pipeline is bringing natural gas and whatever else they dig up there.
No.
From North
Dakota.
Oil.
Oil.
Okay. It's Bakken pipeline brings oil from
Bent crude.
Oh. From up in
North Dakota. They want to send it traveling all through the veins of Iowa.
Ooh, it sounds messy. It sounds not so good. So we have had notice that a new book has been published.
Yes. It's been edited by Stephanie Brooke Trout and Taylor Brorby. And Taylor lives with me. So I've been following this process very, very closely. I'm wonderfully proud of him. And it will be released next week, but the first printing, of which is 2,000 copies, has already been completely sold out.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So it's called Fracking.
Fractured.
Fracture. And it's all about fracking. It's a lot of essays written by various people around the country. Taylor is originally from North Dakota, so he's, of course, very involved in the fracking process and knows a good deal about it. So Lana has a little interview with Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor came in just pleased as punch that his book is finally, after all the work, it's ready to go. And we start out with Taylor Broby reading a little bit about the book. He presents these thoughts to kind of give context to the issue and then talks more about his book.
In September of 2013, a farmer in North Dakota discovered an oil spill on his land. Due to fracking, over 865,000 gallons of oil spread across his farm, the largest inland oil spill in America's history. Each day, flares roar across the prairie, pipelines carry oil from coast to coast, and trains haul sweet crude around the country. Oil, chemical, and saltwater spills seep into watersheds. Filter socks filled with radioactive fluid are illegally disposed of in abandoned buildings. Sex trafficking plagues rural communities. That's what the front lines of fracking looks like. Our dependence on oil and natural gas compromises life on the planet. We can't change the rules of nature, but we can change how we live on Earth. Hydraulic fracking isn't just a problem. It can also be an opportunity to reimagine our place on the planet. Fracture is part of the struggle to heal the broken land of America.
So we're here in the kitchen with Taylor Broby. Taylor, you have some good news. What is that?
Well, first, it's always good to be on the Donna Lana Kitchen, Lana. And the good news is I have a book coming out in just a week and a half here, published on Valentine's Day. It's the nation's first anthology of creative writing on hydraulic fracking, which most people don't think about poems about pump jacks, but it's about to enter the world and has been well received so far.
Well, we may not put those two genres together, but there certainly is concern about hydraulic fracking. Tell me more about your book. What does it include?
So it includes short stories, you know, pieces of fiction, which in some ways feel more like lived reality than even the nonfiction essays which are in it. Some of what we're hearing, both in the anthology and in news sources, it's hard to believe, you know, pipelines spilling under rivers to pollute watersheds and drinking water, flares flying. There are poems in this anthology, too. So we're trying to get as much of the creative writing world together. We're hearing things from news sources, but what can really good art tap into us? What can a good poem about pump jacks, about flares flying around the country, about places people love, can that stir us not only in our hearts but also in our political system as well?
Who are some of the people that have contributed to this anthology?
So the wonderful thing is we have both emerging and established writers, some names people know both in Ames of Carolyn Raffensperger, Frederick Kirschman, Anna Kruzik, and Claire Kreisel and myself. And we also have some wide-reaching people from Florida. We have people from Utah, like Stephen Trimble, who's a renowned photographer and writer. We have Bill McKibben from Vermont. We have people like David Gesner from North Carolina. We have Pam Houston from Colorado. We have people from all over, both the West, the Midwest, the South, the East. It's our hopes that this anthology brings together people to show that fracking doesn't just happen in North Dakota, Oklahoma, Texas, Wyoming, you know, is banned in New York, but that the impacts of fracking are really felt around the country.
You have done a great job of gathering all this. How long did it take you, and how did you get this idea?
Well, part of the idea came from just feeling really alone, Lana. I'm originally from Western North Dakota, and I've spent much time now living and writing in the Bakken oil boom, both as it's been extremely booming and now as we might be seeing it busting. You know, oil now for a barrel of oil costs less than a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's the reality we're currently living in. So for me, it really came out of this idea of selfishness in some ways of going, I'm not sure initially, though I identify as an environmentalist, sometimes you don't get passionate about things until they're right in your own backyard. And when I moved to Ames, I went to a release party for a wonderful anthology through Ice Cube Press, which is the publisher now of this anthology, but of an anthology called Prairie Gold about the Midwest. And I was talking with Steve Semkin, and we were bonding over our love for a good Minnesota writer, Paul Grucco. And he asked me where I was from, and I said, I just moved from North Dakota, and talking about the oil boom. And off the cuff, I just said, I'm surprised no one has done an anthology on fracking. And he said, hey, that's a good idea. And I made a little mental note and went home and sent him a query letter. He said he wanted a full book proposal. And the following week, we were on the road to doing this. And I invited my good friend and co-editor, Stephanie Brooktrout, to help me with this anthology. And it felt like time was of the essence. Fracking was spreading rampantly at that time. And so we really gave ourselves about a year. We opened up calls in November, opened up submissions, and closed them on June 1st. So we had about 7 months, and we worked all through last summer editing, line editing, all that good literary stuff. And now the book is ready in basically about a year and a half's time. It just felt that it's an urgent call because right now fracking seems like it might also be going back to New Mexico from what I've read this week in the newspapers. Florida is exploring the option of doing fracking down near the Everglades. And so even though the price of oil is falling, this technology is not going away. And my hope is that this isn't a one-note type of book for people. Well, when they go, fracking has gone away, that the problems are gone. It's that new technologies might bring new concern to communities. The extractive oil industries aren't going away so easily right now, and I think this book can provide a model to think about how are we more connected than we often think.
Well, it sounds like a book that I definitely want to read. Has there been interest in the book world?
Well, so far there is some really great news, and it just sort of, you know, it turns me just pink with joy, I guess. The Midwest Independent Booksellers Association just announced that Fracture is its March pick. So what does that mean? It means that Fracture is going to be in 175 independent bookstores in 13 states throughout the Midwest. So local independent bookstores will be carrying this book, will be featuring it throughout the month of March. It's already available for pre-order through Ice Cube Press, as well as Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. So we're just hoping that there's a good ripple effect, that this book really gets into people's hands.
Good. Will it be available in North Dakota?
It will be, actually. I'm going on a week-long book tour there with a few other writers from the anthology, Deborah Marquardt, who teaches right here at Iowa State, a fellow North Dakotan, Catherine Miles, who lives out in Maine, Kathleen Dean Moore, one of our nation's foremost environmental thinkers and writers, Alison Hawthorne Deming, an accomplished poet and nonfiction writer, will be joining us. So we are going through a five-city tour in North Dakota in March.
These are amazing, amazing writers, and to have them all kind of converge on this subject, I can't wait to read this book.
I think it's just felt like an act of love to really feel like you're a part of a community-oriented process. You know, it's not so much my book as I felt the sense of stewardship over this material, and to really bring together
over 50 voices, over half of which are women, which I think is a much-needed perspective in a male-driven way of energy consumption. It's just felt like a gift, and in some ways it just has allowed me to feel a little freer that it doesn't all come down just to you as an individual, that there are people willing to join hands and lift their voices, and hopefully that song goes around the country and people enjoy listening to it.
So look for that book. Thank you for joining me today, Taylor. That's Fracture from Ice Cube Press.
So Ice Cube Press, it's an Iowa press. We're very, very proud of that. Taylor told me that the book, which is not released actually officially until Valentine's Day, has already sold out of its first printing, which is 2000. They're ready for the second printing. We got a hot topic here. Everybody's paying attention, thank goodness, and it's a wonderful vehicle for learning more about what the actual fracking process is and people's experiences with it. So many interesting pieces. It's a big book. I just sat down and read right through it. It's wonderful. I highly recommend it.
Good job. Good job. You are listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was music by John Berquist and the Southside Swedes, a little accordion music. Never have a bad reason for having accordion music. I sure like that. That's good.
Is Valentine's Day this week?
You bet.
See, I'm a little disoriented. Sorry, folks.
Yeah. Here she flies in from across the world. We have to update her on things. Valentine's Day, I believe, is this coming weekend. So, if you have any thoughts for Valentine's
Day.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry. I'm very conventional.
I love chocolate. And it's a lovely gift. And if you have something nice to say to your Valentine's, please do. Sometimes just the gift of yourself is good, too.
Yes, the gift of time and attention.
Yes, it is. I have been also, this time of year, besides Mardi Gras and the weather and the caucuses and the Super Bowl, there's other things going on. All of us that are looking forward to the spring garden are plowing through all those seed catalogs, planting our garden, and sending in our orders and dreaming big. We are dreaming big. And
Lana's dreaming big. She's going to start the seeds for me.
I can do that. I enjoy doing that. A little too cold to do it now, but I do have plans and things are in the mail. I can just feel it. Yes. And while I was doing that, I realized that there's a connection between seed catalogs and Valentine's Day coming up. There's a lot of food things. There's a lot of vegetables that have wonderful names that are evocative of love and goodness and hearts and Valentine's Day, mainly because I ran across my favorite, one of my favorite bush beans is called Valentine bean or black Valentine. It's a couple different varieties. Yes, there is a Valentine bean. And there's, if you kind of broaden your thoughts out a little bit more, here's a Valentine wish for all of you, for all your gardeners and all your people that eat food. There's the Valentine beans, of course, but then there's Sweet Annie, Sweet William. There's peaches and cream, sweet corn, lots of sweet corn. And here's an improbable name for a flower, but it has something to do with Valentine's Day. It's called Love Lies Bleeding. Do you know that flower?
You know, I don't know, but I've certainly read that a number of times. What does it look like?
I think it's in the amaranth family. It's got a big panicle of red, red long blossom that lays down. It kind of, it's a very sad-looking sort of flower. And
what's the one that we get early in the spring? Oh, Bleeding Hearts, too.
Bleeding Heart. There you go.
There we go.
So Love Lies Bleeding, Bleeding Heart. And there's a one that I really like called Kiss Me Over the Garden Gate.
Know that one.
So happy Valentine's Day to you too there. And the sugar snap peas, there's the honeydew melon. Yes, sugar baby watermelon.
Sweet pea. Yeah.
Oh, I like sweet peas.
Oh, and I love sweet peas.
And there's sweet 100 tomatoes. And last but not least, there's blushing butterhead lettuce.
Are you going to grow some blushing butter? Say that again.
Blushing butterhead lettuce.
Blushing butterhead lettuce. Okay.
I don't know. I shall see. There's a lot of red-tinged green stuff out there let's think spring. Let's think good thoughts and think ahead all of our good thoughts and love for Valentine's
Day. Yes, the spring
Day.
Will come.
Yeah. Oh, we had a talk about a good book coming out earlier in this show. I had a recipe book recommended to me by my friend Paula Widener. She's a listener here in town, listens to the Donna Lana Kitchen. She said, she was looking for a recipe book to send her son who lives, I believe, in Colorado someplace, needed something for a kitchen just kind of starting out, something that he could relate to. And she recommended this book. It's called Good and Cheap. Eat Well on $4 a Day by Leanne Brown. It was fulfillment of a final project for a master's degree in food studies at New York University. This book came up from her interest in cost-effective ways for people to feed themselves. In particular, she says, she designed the recipes to fit the budgets of people living on SNAP, food stamps, the U.S. program that used to be called food stamps. And she says if you're on SNAP, you already know that the benefit formulas are complicated, but the rule of thumb is that you end up with $4 per person per day to spend on food. And it's a challenge to live on so little. So this recipe book is made with recipes for cooking just about anything, simply and well. But she also has advice for buying wisely, storing things wisely, how to use basic foodstuffs in a lot of different ways, because you can buy things ahead and use things more than one way. Go ahead and buy the flour so you can make your own stuff, pancakes, or breads, or puddings, or whatever, and buying larger amounts. And if possible,
that's what the pantry is for.
Yes, if possible, buy some pantry items that you can keep and use over a long time, like good olive oil or whatever. But anyway, this is a good book to get you thinking about eating well on not so much money.
And the book is a bargain, right? Didn't you say it's downloadable?
Yes. You may go to www.leannebrown.com, leannebrown.com, and it's downloadable on a free PDF, or you can buy a print copy from her, too. So that's Leanne Brown. And the book is called Good and Cheap Eat Well on $4 a Day. Thank you, Paula Widener, for sending that along. That's good. Also, since it's cold and we can only dream of seed catalogs now, here is a little poem. It's called A Word About Winter by Ogden Nash.
An American. Is he English or American?
I don't know. Maybe somebody will call in and correct us.
He's a classic. We grew up with him.
Yeah. A Word About Winter. Now the frost is on the pane, rugs upon the floor again. Now the screens are in the cellar. Now the student dons a speller. Lengthy summer noon is gone. Twilight treads the heel of dawn. Round-eyed sun is now a squinter. Tiptoe breeze, a panting sprinter. Every cloud a blizzard hinter. Squirrel on the snow, a printer. Rain sprout sprouteth icy splinter. Willy-nilly, this is winter. Runneth nose and chappeth lip. Draft evadeth weather strip. Doctor wrestleth with grip. In never-ending rivalship, rosebud droops in garden shoddy. Blood is cold and thin in body. Weary postman dreams of toddy. Head before the hearth grows knotty. Every cloud a blizzard hinter. Squirrel on the snow a printer. Rain sprout sprouteth icy splinter. Willy-nilly, this is winter. A poem from Ogden Nash. Well, welcome back, Donna. I'm so glad you're back.
Oh, boy, we got a lot of things to get going again here in Iowa. I missed all of you.
Good. We have a few upcoming things I'd like to mention. Oh, beside Taylor Broby's new book coming out, soon to be in stores. Do catch that. Fracture. There is going to be...
We have to make sure the library buys a copy.
Oh, I bet they will.
I hope so.
They're nice folks. Thursday, February 11th this week, 6:30 p.m. at the Ames Public Library Auditorium, a discussion will happen. A group is gathering to explore an idea about Ames Community Without Walls. It's a startup idea and an organization session for dealing with how can we cooperate mindfully with each other for local folks over 60 to explore ways to live in place as we age, giving each other support for many issues like food, sustainability, health, arts, social involvement. It's a dessert potluck. Bring something if you'd like. Coffee, tea is provided. That's Thursday, February 11th, 6:30 at the Ames Public Library. RSVP to Marilyn@farmtofolk.com. And to celebrate with your favorite Valentine or meet a new one, come to a special, get this, special Sweethearts Contra Dance Saturday, February 13th. Potluck at 7 o'clock, dancing at 8 at the Collegiate Wesley Annex over in Campus Town, 130 South Sheldon Avenue in Ames. It's our usual Central Iowa Barn Dance location. Special dance here. The caller is going to be Reed Miller, music by the Porch Stompers. And we still are going to be having the regular barn dance on the fourth Saturday of this month, too. So more information about that, go to www.cibd.org.
Do you think they'll play a lot of waltzes for Valentine's Day?
Well, I'm certainly going to ask for lots of waltzes for Valentine's Day.
I love a waltz.
That's a good hint. Well, you have been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna's back. My name is Lana Noctigal. We've had fine engineering by Rick Morrison. And also here is...
Donna Prisgintas.
I knew you wanted to hear her again. There you go. We'll go out with a tune by the Southside Swedes again. This one's called Metaskukja. It's a Finnish folk song called Flowers of the Forest. Yes, this is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. Eat good food and enjoy life.